Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pins and the pushes and the and then start all over again. See, look, nobody's pushing me anymore, okay? Not you, not the company, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushes, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, can you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
You know, nobody's closing me out of my business.
What's up, everybody? That's the dude, Willie Hutch. That's the song. Yeah, brothers are going to work it out. Brothers and sisters are going to work it out. We're going to die trying. That's what's happening. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. Kay's son and friends. Yeah, I did say that right, right? And we've been doing this for a minute. Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders. Those are the my brothers. Another black man was killed in Minnesota in the middle of the trial, no less. In the middle of the trial of George Floyd's murderer, another black man was shot and killed. So, you know, and we got other stuff that maybe we'll have a chance to get to after everybody blows off some steam or gives their two cents about it. You know, to me, it's obvious. I've been saying this. I think I've said something similar to this. It's obvious to me. It was no accident, you know. What we got to do, you can draw a straight line to everything that's going down, right? You can draw a straight line from, say, the Republicans' attempts in state legislatures to restrict voting rights to black people, right? And it's done with almost surgical precision, which is what some judge said, I think, in regards to North Carolina's attempts to do that several years ago. And you look at that. You look at how the governor of Georgia signed that legislation into law and where they chose to frame that picture of him signing that legislation into law, right, in front of a plantation with all these white guys, right? Then you draw the line there to all of the Republicans saying that they would back Donald Trump if he ran for office before Nikki Haley said yesterday, I believe she would run. And all of them seem to have no problem at all going to him, mentioning him as if it's okay. If it's okay to mention his name, he should be referred to as the one who should not be, name shall not be mentioned, you know, some Monty Python type shit, right? The fact that they have the nerve to mention the name of a man who led an insurrection and was trying to get and was okay with people hanging his vice president or at least encouraged them. The fact that this guy caused single-handedly the racism and the attacks on Asian people in the United States because of his referral to the virus as the Kung Flu. And they don't have a problem with mentioning his name in conjunction with running office, in conjunction with any type of public service at all. They have no problem whatsoever. There's a straight line you can draw from there. And then finally, to this cop who shoots this brother, who she claims that she thought she was grabbing her taser, which is on the other side of her body, because if you look at the footage, you see where the brother's taser is. That was the black cop standing there that was trying to handcuff him. You see where his taser is on his left side of his body, but she reaches on her right side. And if you look at the footage even more, the body cam, you can feel it. They've said you could feel that in your hands. Just, it was no accident. No accident. When they've already come out and admitted that these white supremacist groups have infiltrated the police force, the military service, all of these branches of the government. How do you think January 6th happened? They're sitting Congress people. So there's a straight line in what they plan to do, and they're going to plan to try and do it again. Because the supremacists, the people who built this country, these people aren't infiltrated into these organizations. They're not infiltrated. They're not embedded in law enforcement and the military. They've always been there. You know why? Because that was the business that America used to be in up until, 30 seconds ago, and maybe they'll still be in that business. That's the business that this country's been in. To impede the right of black people for self-determination. And when these idiots say, well, we're going to build this country, was supposed to be a white nation, we developed it to be a white nation, if that was true, you ignorant bastard, not knowing history, and people have been traveling back and forth through this continent long before Columbus was lost, you idiot. But if that was true, then why'd you bring people over here to toil the land and do all the work for you if you meant it to be just about your nation and your people? You actually thought you were going to make slaves of other human beings? There's a straight line, y'all. These people ain't embedded. They're just left over. Tired of this bullshit. Killing black people like this, all right, and then come around and make it up. She meant to kill that boy. Bring Byron in here, a historian. What's up, Byron? How you doing?
Well, another day in Washington, D.C., and watching the nation undergo yet another another incident in which it's just proving that the problem is that there are just too many weapons in this country, and even in police hands, too many weapons. Judge, jury, executioner, it doesn't matter. If she didn't get him with the first shot, she would have electrocuted him to death with the taser gun. So let's be very clear on the which sadistic murder is worse. Getting shot in the chest with 38, what do they give those officers now? Whatever the weapon, it's made to kill. And then shock treatment, just enough voltage, just enough to make you almost get killed. But I mean, ultimately, because listening to the pathology of this person that the expert witness on the Chauvin case came today, listening to him, I would rather have somebody tell me that, well, one of the reasons why the heart is big on most and all African Americans is because they have high blood pressure. So we can get dispense with that theory right off the bat, because it sounds like, you know, insane defense legal BS. Okay, because all we want is the truth, Eric. And yeah, another kid is killed, another black person is killed by a cop. And I think the sadistic side of it all, comic relief, is like, oops, there it is. There's another defense. Goes right up there with Twinkie defense and the influenza. You remember that defense? So now we have the oops, there it is. I didn't mean that. It was an accident. That's as perverted as it gets. Okay, I can't, I mean, it's like, really, really? And then you're going to absolve yourself, not waiting for it to go to court to adjudicate it. You're going to absolve yourself by resigning from the police department, Madam Chief. Oh, that makes it okay now. Oops, there's another reason why it's okay, because you can resign now. See, that's another side of that BS that we have to deal with. But, you know, in everything that is all equal, Eric, it comes back to one thing, doesn't it? no matter what the situation, no matter what the evidence, no matter what it is, it's black, and it is all about race. The gerrymandering, what is it about? Race. The cop killings, what is it about? Race. There's not enough money to put a laptop in a child's hand because they have to stay home due to a lockdown. What is it about? Race. How about bad water? Flint, Michigan. What is it about? Race. Tell me what's not about race.
Right. That's true. Let's go in and bring Wayne in real quick and get his thoughts on the issue. Hey, Wayne Gilman, Mr. Newsman.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. I have to concur with everything both of you have said. I mean, I'm so emotionally spent from this because every time I think there's a likelihood that we could probably achieve something, it just seems to get worse and worse, you know. It's infuriating. And I'm lost for answers. The last time we spoke, a week ago, it just occurred to me, a week ago tonight, I was trying to get back to my car late at night, long after the show, and I was about to be held up. I'm not saying this is almost irrelevant, but in a way I'm going to try to bring it full circle. I was outside Central Park looking for my car, and then as I'm getting there, two people of color, young men, and I was aware that they were there, but I don't know why it took them four blocks to consider asking me for the time and asking me for some money. But I went with the ride, and I get in front of my car, and it's the usual crap that goes on in our community. And it bothers me that we have this issue of black-on-black crime. And then, fortunately, and this is just the good Lord was on my side, the police department in New York stepped up the surveillance around the park because of all the issues going on within the Asian community. And I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time. I certainly, when I parked my car, was during the day. I didn't expect there would be a problem. But there were two plainclothes cops that were watching these two guys, young men, from 110th Street down to 101st, if you're familiar with the landscape of Central Park or the east side, Fifth Avenue. And they saw what was going on and came to my defense. And these two officers were people of color. But when I juxtapose what happened to them, because all I had to do was just give them my information, I didn't have to press charges because, quite frankly, all they did was ask questions, but they knew what was going on. And then I go home, turn the idiot tube on, and they keep repeating over and over the events. I'm a news junkie. I'm retired, but I'm still a news junkie. And you see the events from the Derek Chauvin case, and then they go back to Virginia with the Latino brother who is a soldier and a decorated soldier, a lieutenant, a medic in Virginia being stopped because he didn't have the right tags on. And I say to myself, you know, it's like I'm in a box, and I feel like an animal who's helpless. It just reminds me of a childhood game we used to play in Trinidad when I was a child, where you would throw a frog, a leaping frog, into a pot of boiling water to see if it would jump out or if it would stay. And obviously, the frog that decided to jump in while the water was lukewarm, it would stay, not realizing that it's about to die because the heat is being turned. It's almost like as if I have to tolerate all this freaking lukewarm water to the point that I'm about to expire. and I have no answers. I mean, it's a poor analogy, but I just feel like it's just one of these things. It's like every time I think I have an opportunity to feel that the country is going to go back in the right direction and that the young people, the millennials out here who see what's going on, and some of them are suffering from guilt, especially the white ones whose parents have lived through what I've lived through, and you thought this would be over. And then, you know, what am I supposed to do? I can't go anywhere. I feel trapped like some helpless frog, like some roach about to be stepped on in the corner. I mean, it's an aggravating.
So are you
and to the point where I want to get counseling for my thoughts that I shouldn't feel this way.
So the
it saddens me. I'm almost 70 freaking years old, and shit hasn't, excuse me, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed since 1968.
So I'm curious.
I'm sorry.
I'm a little confused. You said the brothers were getting ready to get robbed. Black police happened, plainclothes peeped it. You null and voided the situation. I'm just trying to, the connection between the larger, you're saying.
The connection is, I feel frustrated by the ills in our community that force young people to do what they do. You know, as far as I'm concerned, not everybody, as you've, you know, aptly pointed out, you know, in the other society, they don't, a lot of them are not suffering from what we're going through. They don't understand. You know, I don't know anything about these two young men, but I feel, you know, I grew up in an environment that is comparable to what I would suspect. I don't know anything about. All I knew was that these two young black cops in plain clothes came to my rescue because they were watching them, and apparently they had been watching them all night. You know, I'm assuming this is what went on, you know. But the fact of the matter is, it's just that it's bothersome to think that, you know, you want to protect yourself, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I was in the environment that I was in, because it could have happened anywhere. But I'm just saying that it's just bothersome when you stop and think that, you know, you rely on the police for help. This is what their mission statement is all about, to protect and serve. Those words are there. And yet, you know, if you're a person of color, it's like you're in this quandary with respect to support. And the thing is that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the case involving George Floyd, a mistrial should be declared. There's no objectivity. These people who are sitting on the freaking jury know what happened 10 miles away. They know what happened to Dwayne, can't think of his last name now, Williams. Is it Williams? Right. And it just, you know, I don't know. And I'm tired of
I'm tired
of the nonsense that the police come up with this. It's the nonsense that they used to do in New York in 48 hours. It's just that there was no sequence. They already, you know, got the, you know, what the line they're going to say. Well, from all indications, it seems like it was an accident. You know, that there was a need to pull out a gun or a taser, and Brian, you're right. One is just as deadly as the other, you know?
Here's what I got to say about that. I understand what you're saying, but for me, what I'm focused on in particular is the racism aspect that we experience. I understand that our community and all of that, what you were saying, what you're experiencing and your experiences and your feelings. But what I'm particularly concerned about and right now for me and what's been going on for this country since my birth and hundreds of years before that is the consistent and the systematic racism that we've been experiencing as black people and all the ills that happen as a result of that, causing us to turn in and the natural ills of society that might cause the underclass to happen to turn on themselves or turn to a life of crime or whatever. But what I'm particularly focused on, and in this particular case, is that the line that can be drawn and the clear system of racism and how they practice and initiate it, and those that have
pledged allegiance. Clearly, there are individuals that have pledged allegiance to white supremacy, and they take the opportunities where they can. And I believe that's what happened with this woman, a cop that was there, that she's probably in on that mission, and she took the opportunity there when she could. Just like Derek, George Floyd's murderer, took the opportunity when he could and thought he was going to get away with it, because 99% of the time, they all get away with it. I don't want a mistrial, certainly don't want that. I thought it was interesting today that the pathologist that they brought in, was from South Africa. And, he was in school during the time of the racist regime in South Africa. How interesting that he was also, when he got his pathology degree, I can imagine that he probably took some classes and worked on, if they worked on cadavers and whatever, that he probably would have been, if we know history, right, Byron, during the course of that time, that there was black unrest in South Africa. So could it have been possible that this pathologist that testified for the defense today might have honed some of his skills on some black bodies that were killed or harmed, or lives were brought to an end during protesting apartheid in South Africa. The nerve of these people to bring this individual who then comes to America and testifies in a case in Maryland of white cops doing the same type of murder, end up murdering another individual in Maryland that similarly to what happened with George Floyd. And so that's what I'm talking about, the through line and the signals that they give to each other that we're going to continue this system. You know, all that, you know, running into the brothers and all that, that's great. And I guess I don't want us to lose focus on that issue, that we constantly have to battle this, and it's going to be a struggle until we beat the last person that believes in this system of oppression or believes that they will stand in our way as a people for our right to self-determination.
I agree with you, Eric. I just want to interject for a second here that, you know, all I'm saying is that everything is predicated on racism in this country.
Exactly.
You know,
I'm
not suggesting that anybody who is going through the situation that they are forced to do things in order to you know, eat or you know, they think this is the easy way out to you know, jump on someone if the opportunity is there. You know, I still think that there's a commonality. There is a thread. There is a nexus that basically indicates that, you know, when you look at the pathos of what it is this society is predicated on, it all goes back to race. You know,
exactly.
I mean, the fact
exactly.
that they would bring this South African, I was about to go there earlier about to offer testimony on behalf of the defense. I mean, the arguments that they have are so flimsy. I don't even know why we're having a trial, because the empirical evidence is there in the 9 minutes in the tape. There have been so many experts that were brought on by the prosecution, you know? And, yeah, I don't want necessarily deep down inside a mistrial, but I certainly, you know, don't see where, you know, the jury is not supposed to be, to my recollection, influenced. They're supposed to be sequestered. The you know, in this day and age, I don't even see how that you know what the judicial system expects of potential jurors not to hear, see, touch, smell. I mean, it's almost irrelevant. You know, the fact of the matter is, we're living in an age now that news is so immediate, whether it's, you know, progressive news or conservative news. Anybody could be tainted. I guess that's my point, and forgive me but the bottom line is it's just that it's just sad and it's frustrating and I'm tired.
It's not an issue.
Every week I'm tired.
It's not an issue that this jury is going to be tainted. The judge said that the guy tried to rule for to sequester the jury, and the judge said no. It's not an issue that they're going to be tainted. Why? And even if they were, you know, I'm to the thinking it's been so far to the other side, and it might be unfair, and it might We might be able to be accused of not playing by the fair and the rules, but why, damn it, do we suddenly and always have to play by the rules when the other side never does? They tell us to play by the rules. So even if this information were to sway them one way or the other to say, yeah, you know what, them cops really did it because she just shot that other kid, that's on our side. So you'll have to forgive me if I say, so what? We get one for the home team, one out of 150,000. I don't know why. That's my argument, at least anyway. What were you going to say, Byron?
I was about to opine that the arrogance, they couldn't have found a more arrogant white male to sit there and try to give us a elementary school rollout and understanding of how the heart works. I think I remember learning that through a back in the fifth and sixth grade, because he was he was arrogant. He talked down to the people. You know, his heritage came with him, and certainly, yes, I know he's supposed to be working on behalf of the defense, but you know, working on behalf of the defense and then showing your white arrogance, and then yes, his accent held more to that as anything else. And I, you know, the references to the British Empire, well, there it is. Okay? A lot of dynamics are changing, folks. The prince just died. You think all this is just happenstance and accidental? There's a perception far, far deeper and more profound than just connecting a few dots. It's all interconnected. And it's amazing to me that we're so intelligent that we don't pick up on it. The pathos of it is, and yes, the theatrics of it is, yes, it's very dramatic.
What's the connection with the prince? Other than why should I give a...
The prince and the arrogance of British Empire, the arrogance of a white man from South Africa with his arrogant attitude sitting there in a jury, sitting there in a witness box trying to convince people that he knows a lot about something. But did you not know, Eric, and I said this earlier, how long does it take for us to know that black people have hypertension and whose hearts are larger as a result of what? Racism?
Mm-hmm.
See, I mean, it's just narrow it down to common sense. I mean, you're right. How arrogant to put that man up there and be from South Africa and then try to spew that common racist ideological concept. It's embedded into the tone of his voice.
And you're absolutely right, Byron. The arrogance, you know, the fact that he had to point out that in the British system, doctors are educated over a period of 6 years. It's only four in this country. And then, you know, I didn't see all of his testimony, but what else does the freaking defense have? They're going to pull out all the stops to find some knucklehead to get this guy Shervin off.
Right.
And we don't know what the jury looks like. We don't know. We can't read their faces.
At the point of which, and here's something else, fellas. At the point of which, yeah, they wanted to have it moved out of the area. Why? Because of another incident that happened sort of 10 miles from where they were is being sequestered, and he wants to get it. They want to move it out of which area do they want to go to? You go to anywhere in America, it's the same wherever you want to go. See, playing with our intellectual. They're playing games with our intellect, and the common sense matter of it all is, yes, how many more millions of people have to witness that they just saw a murder live on living color? How many more people have to see a witness that you just saw some zombies climbing the Capitol, and they're not even having the honest enough opinion to call them Republicans? Come on, the insurrectionists, who you want to call them? Okay, I'll call them they were Republicans. And then you wonder why we got what we got? Well, we got a system that's very, very broken. And fixing it ultimately has to come back down to, are you going to abide by the rules that you guided yourself by and claim to be as a free democracy equal to all, or you can condescend it and circumvent it and gerrymander it and take it to the Supreme Court how many more times and try to kill all the opportunities where you tried to make it equal, but all along the way you kept allowing acts of treason against your rule of law. It's like I heard the mayor of this place mandated that they don't use tear gas and shoot rubber bullets. Well, what the hell was going on? If he's not in control, who is in control?
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing about the rule situation, you know, it's like I always say, they didn't really mean it. The whole Constitution, all that stuff, they didn't mean it. That's what they call campaign promises. None of that stuff was meant to be real. That's why it's broken. That's why the system seems like it's broken, because they didn't mean it.
So now how are we going to take it, guys? Come on now. We recognize what the problem is. Enough of the moaning and crying and, oh, we know what it is and what was us and what we going to do.
So what we're going to do part
engages a commitment that says stop playing games, virtual games with it, because everybody else wants to play it like it's a virtual game. You know, white people are treated like citizens, we are treated like subjects.
Right. So it's more life and death for us. America catches a cold, black people catch pneumonia. To me, it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
So it's like how many people, when I look at police forces now, looking like how many of those people over there are of color? And unfortunately, don't want to look at it that way. Don't want to assume that all of the white people over there are going to mean me harm, are going to be racist, but I got to go the way things have been going down thus far, and probably depending on their particular community, I might assume that all of these white cops could be suspected of being racist. So what we need is a more equitable police force. Don't let it be all one particular race or tribe or whatever, since clearly that system doesn't work. You know, I was watching a couple of talking head shows earlier today. They said the whole system, I think it was on either Tiffany Cross's show or whatever, where the whole system is broken. Yeah, the whole policing, yeah, people are starting to believe that the system of policing is broken because it was based on keeping the law. Part of the law was enslaving, keeping people that were enslaved down, downtrodden, under control. I mean, what brought me to mind why she had to shoot him, you know, people were saying this brother was only pulled over for his tags or for this or for that. And when he tried to run, they were, you know, it's always when a black person tries to run or get away, cops almost treat him like, either catch him or kill him. Either catch them right now or kill them. Subdue them right now or kill them. Subdue them, take them to prison, put them in the prison system. Let's make money off of them. If we can't do that, we will murder them now. That is a slave catcher syndrome.
The concept of superiority is to find someone you have to be superior to,
right.
Okay? And no one comes even engaging anywhere comes close to your superiority because you deem your own essence to be superior to any and all. And it's like the concept of our countries from A to Z. It's like, we as a country have been engaged since its inception, involved in attacking people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Consider it. Consider the concept. The Native American Indians, they didn't do nothing to these white people who landed on Plymouth Rock. Come on. They continue to abuse people of color. And it's embedded into its concept as government. And because every war that we have been in, every war minus the German war, two German wars, mind you, have always been against people of color. And so ultimately, it's embedded into the psyche of a police officer who's just come out of the Marines and served two terms in Iraq, and he's going to get a job, and he goes to a place like Brooklyn, believe it or not, Minnesota, Brooklyn, Minnesota, to get hired as a police officer, and they love his record because he's a sharpshooter. He's, you know, he was really good at taking commands and everything else. But his one psyche thing that he does that they don't understand is that when he comes back to be hired to do the training and take all the essence to get a badge and be judged to protect and serve our community, sees another person of color who is his enemy. Even the black ones are taught that. See, we have to change the philosophy of our whole concept, because when you engage it on based on people of color are always going to end up at the end of a barrel of a gun. And that's where it is right now. So it doesn't matter who's holding the gun. The target is us. And guns are made for a target. Guns are specifically made for a target. Now, who is the target?
Well, I mean, they're made to destroy things. You know.
Okay.
And
in this
too,
country, the target, unfortunately, happens to be people of color. Every single day, it doesn't matter who's holding the gun, a police officer, a whacked-out, crazy guy at a grocery store. Doesn't matter who's holding the gun. You got 400 million guns in a nation of 350 million people. Do you own a gun? And if you don't own a gun, then somebody's pointing the gun that they want you to own is pointing it right at you.
Well, that's the issue I was going to talk about. You need to have even Steven, you know, and that's the whole thing.
And then you have to speak out.
We haven't been spinning around.
What does that prove?
What'd you say?
So you have the shootout at the OK Corral. What does that prove? Everybody's got a gun. Great.
Right. You got to defend
now
yourself.
What?
We need, in terms of systems to try and battle against what we're going against in this country, we need to have key people in the right places. Like who, I don't know about you guys, but I certainly was surprised to see the mayor of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, be a black guy. And I felt somewhat relieved. And also to see the fact that his city manager and I guess someone else standing up there answering questions at the brief clip that I saw were black. So I felt somewhat relieved that at least it might be, and by his words, that he felt that the police officer should be fired, that at least we were going to get some sort of a reasonable, open-minded approach to this. Now, of course, the police chief, this is why I'm saying, numbers of them are embedded, are still left over in the system. The police chief tried to downplay it and say, you know, he believed that he was the one that put out the initial narrative that she mistakenly grabbed her taser because she was saying taser, taser. But her body, you know, if you look at the footage, she's holding the gun out from her body. You can see it in front of you. So that should tell you something. And that's just something that sticks in my head, why it's not clearly obvious. But it also, you can draw a straight line from this, her police chief, he resigned as well, but draw a straight line to the police chief in Atlanta who tried to say about the guy who shot up the people at the Asian spa that he was having a bad day. If you remember that, that police chief said he was a guy and he was just, he had a bad day, and as if it was, you know, some sort of lightweight issue for the guys to talk about. That murder, this mass murder of these people of color, was a lightweight issue to talk about. People getting murdered, and I think that he had to end up resigning because of that. But this is the way they think. And certainly, Wayne brought up the issue in Virginia about the cop, the cops doing that to a lieutenant, black army serving army lieutenant. So I mean, you know, that's the system that we're in. You mentioned a little bit about the training. You know, my dad has been monitoring that in Essex County about the training of new sheriffs to make sure that there's more of a sensitivity. I was going to see if he could call in a little bit and just address that. But that's certainly something that needs to be. If we're going to blow up the whole system, or at least turn it over at least once or twice, or shake it up like a snow globe, and then, you know, we need to have a plan. Like I saw Carmen Best, former police chief of the Seattle Police Department, when Jason Johnson had mentioned the breaking the whole system down, like you were saying, I think you were saying, Wayne, or one of you guys were saying about, you got to have a plan in place. What are we going to do? We talked about the problem enough, but what's going to be the plan in place that we follow? You know? You guys have any heavy
to also note, the same mayor that you just talked about, I referenced this, his city council voted that the police do not use rubber bullets or tear gas in this current ongoing event in Minnesota. And so what happens? Two nights of yes, they have a curfew, but in both of those nights, who fired the tear gas and who fired the police bullets? That's why I prefaced this earlier. Who's in charge? Because if we're allowing democracy to fall apart,
Byron, you're in the service, right? Were you in the service, or your son is in the service, right?
Yes, I am sitting there, but in this same city that we're just talking about the mayor, this is what's going on, because this is a reference going back to Wilmington, North Carolina, 1800s.
Right, hold on for a second. When you say who's in charge, right, they can be in charge, but that's why I'm talking about the numbers. Hold on, bro. That's why I'm talking about the numbers. It depends on who's in charge at the right place. He can be charged, in charge of the executive branch, right? And the executive branch says, we're not going to, no rubber bullets or no gas or anything. But the police chief in the rank and file, and that sergeant, that night watch sergeant, will say, the hell with the mayor. Go ahead and follow it. When you talk about who's in charge, you know what it's like. If you know the military chain, when people are out in the field, out in battle, somebody takes over, and they might not do what the initial order was that came down. That's what I'm talking about. That's why we need equal numbers in the ranks. Here we go. We got my dad calling in. I want him to address a police training. Hey, Dad, how you doing? Welcome. I got Byron.
Good evening.
So we were talking.
Good evening, Dr. Payne.
We were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, the situation out here in Minnesota with the other brother getting shot. And Byron brought up a great point about the police training and how – Byron, go ahead. You might want to rehash that. And, Dad, you can address what you're doing in that
situation. Yeah, what we were referencing is that the training of our officers and our whole strategy in defense is that our nation has been in several conflicts since the beginning, most of which, in all of but two, World War One and World War Two, we have been fighting people of color. So your training is one mean, killing machine. You come back, and let's face it, a lot of these cities that are hiring our military are coming back home shell-shocked from Iraq or wherever, Afghanistan. They can get a police job. But once again, these young people who are in these places who are even being trained by officers who are well-meaning are still training them to kill an object. And the object of most of the killings right now and have been for several decades are people of color. And the training, unfortunately, keeps personifying killing the subject. And I heard something on Joy Reid tonight. She said white people are treated like citizens. Black people are treated like subjects. And that's the part of which, even in the police training, that training is taking and looking at us, at the people that they are committed to protect and serve, not as citizens, but as subjects.
Yeah.
And that has to change.
Yeah.
I guess those of you, those of us who have know a little bit about the history of this nation, you know that the idea of police came about during the enslavement time, when they set up a force of if enslaved people escaped, then the police were organized in order to capture enslaved people that had escaped from their masters, et cetera, et cetera. So that was their initial role to play in the communities. That their job was to catch and return enslaved people that had escaped from their masters, et cetera. So that it goes back during that time there. One of the things that we need to keep in mind is the fact that they're talking about de-escalation now. You hear that a lot with police, they're being trained or should be being trained on how to de-escalate a situation if they come across a situation or if someone is causing trouble or they're about to be arrested, that the police are being supposedly, in some instances, are being trained how to de-escalate that situation so that it doesn't continue in that direction where the person is being stopped, you know, becomes more and more irate. The police officer gets equally as irate, et cetera. So there's this whole new thing about, and I hope it's being implemented across the board, de-escalation of a situation so they don't end up doing that. So I think one of the things that that we have to keep in mind is that this whole business started way back during the time of enslavement. And then the other thing is that what I have noticed, and I have, as a matter of fact, been told most recently that, and I think Eric has mentioned it, that a lot of people from the military become police officers. And, you know, in the military, if you're trained with a firearm, you're trained that when you pull that fire alarm out at the enemy, the reason for pulling it out is to shoot it. That training with a firearm in the service is that when you get to the point where you in fact pull out that weapon, it is for the purpose is to shoot it. All right, and so we're getting a lot of people that are becoming police officers in the civilian life who have been trained that weapon is there for the purpose is to shoot it, and so there has to be some retraining of people coming in or beyond that. We need to be able to, what has to happen is that we need to make sure that police organizations evaluate people before they become recruited. What's happened now is they say, oh, yes, we go through psychological training, et cetera, when we hire people. That's too late. When you hire someone without having tested them, thoroughly tested them to see whether or not what their reaction is when they confront somebody else. It's too late then. You don't bring people on as cadets to become police officers unless you have been able to determine through psychological testing whether or not that person has the method of dealing with situations by shooting the weapon. That can be done. The evaluation of too many people is after they become cadets and after they go through training. One thing that I can say, hopefully, is that in Essex County now, the police academy that is used to train most police officers coming on for most of the municipalities in Essex County, that there is an enlightened training that's going on now. That before the present director and management of our police academy in Essex County, it was under somebody else's leadership, which taught the recruits that when you go into those neighborhoods, you're going into a zone, a dangerous zone. That it was put in their heads that when you get into some of these communities, these areas, that you're going into a war zone. And so we've had to reverse that in our police academy now in Essex County, that you're not taught that you're going into war zone. As a matter of fact, the previous managers of the academy had the recruits shave their heads and be taught that they're going into a war zone. And so that's been changed, and that the one thing that I'm trying to get across is that we should not accept people who apply to become police officers and then say that we're going to train them and we should not hire them to become police officers until they've gone through the test. They should not go through the testing, psychological testing, once they're cadet. That should happen beforehand. So you can identify people who have the proclivity for pulling the gun and shooting it. You can determine that, how they will react, before putting the uniform on them. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do right now. The idea is that you're in there, not that this is not the enemy, and that's what they were being taught before. They said the enemy in those communities, and you have to make sure that you deal with them. The only thing I'd like to underscore is that many of the people, as I said, and we all know, is that a lot of military guys who are getting out of the service are coming to become police officers or being hired. And that has made clear that when you're in the military, when you have a weapon and when you get to the point where you pull the weapon, the purpose is to pull the trigger. And so that's something that needs to be dealt with seriously. And the training and the psychological testing needs to be done before a person becomes a candidate. If, in fact, a person fails that, they should not become a cadet and become police officers. So, but anyway, that's a long way to say that we've got a way to go. There is some hope, some hope. I don't know how we explain this business where the police officer pulled out her weapon and killed a guy and thinking that she was tasing him after 26 years. And plus, she was a trainer herself. She was one who trained the recruits. So there's
she was training someone that day. I understand from what I think, if I heard correctly, that she was, had a trainer that day.
Yes.
But, Dad, let me ask you about this, and you guys can chime in here also after a minute. The notion of police officers living in the community that they police, that they work in, is becoming one that I've heard talked about within the last day or two on a couple of shows. And obviously you've been talking about it forever. And Wayne, you've covered that as well in New York. And Byron, I'm sure you did when you were on BAI, that was a notion in the city as well, that people should, that police officers should live in the community that they serve in. Because, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If they live in the community, then they have a sense of concern for their community. And if they don't, if it's just a job where you punch out at a certain time, you go back to your safe community or your community where you know, you, with your folks, that is something that certainly needs to be reversed or changed right away. Because if, in fact, I mean, it makes sense. If you live in the community, then you're concerned about it, that this is your community, it's part of you, et cetera. However, if you don't and you leave it after 8 hours, you know, you couldn't care less. You're going back to make sure where you live, where your family is safe, et cetera. And if, in fact, you don't live in that community the way you're patrolling, then you're simply not going to give the best tour. You don't have the right mental state to be a person that should be patrolling it or protecting it. No, I mean, that's something I believe strongly in, that people who are going to be up there should be residents of the community which they're protecting.
It's kind of an extension, and maybe when you guys want to jump in, to me it's kind of an extension of all politics are local, right? All community services are local, meaning, you know, you serve the community you live in, and if you have that perspective, then you're going to have more of a vested interest in your block, in your street, where you live, the beautification and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But Wayne, I know that's what you guys reported on back in the day in New York, right, about police officers.
No, I agree. We had it still goes on to this day, the whole issue of home rule. And again, there's got to be a complete, you know, rehab, overdue, reboot of how these people are trained, the thinking, the selection. You know, very often, I know in the New York City Police Department, the vast majority, and there are people of color who've managed to leave the urban center because they feel that living in the burbs is a better quality of life. But you're right. I think there should be some sort of edict enforced that the first 5 or 10 years, if you intend to make this a career, that you live in the very community that you're serving in. And and with respect to training, you know, just to piggyback on Dr. Payne's comments, there's got to be some uniformity in the training process across the country. I think that's the problem. I think, you know, you go into one community, it's one thing, and you go into another, it's another.
Oh.
And a lot of us get lost in the sauce, you know. But I tell you, I'm just spent, man. It just saddens me, you know, all the stuff that we've been through. And, you know, I just feel like in a box. And,
Well, it is. But we can't give up on it, though, because if we do that, then, of course, it's just going to get worse. We have to be able to clarify what it is. For instance, I'm involved now in Estes County, and where I'm, you know, part of the executive's office, where I have raised so much fuss about the behavior of police, not only here but around the country. In fact, finally, when it got to the point with George Floyd last year, I raised so much cane about it that I was finally told, well, they put something together so that everybody and who works for our organization, our county, will begin to receive kind of enlightenment training or what have you. They will be required to attend and begin to participate in the bias, you know, anti-bias, et cetera, things. And so what we're doing now, and I've spoke at the police academy at their graduation the other day, and we have new personnel, as I said before, in the police academy, who are quite aware of the kinds of training that's necessary and what's just being. And I've been asked to come and participate from time to time, but we have to. We can't give up on it, and nor can we have folks. You know, if you want to be a police officer, and there needs to be some obligations where you're vested in it. You see, if you live here, you have some vested, you know, you're invested in it. However, if it's just a job, you'll go away. You know, you'll go to your neighborhood that's far away, where you're with your family, et cetera. Your concerns are not the same. So we have to continue improving. I think there are some minor improvements that come along from time to time, and I'm doing everything I can to make sure that we here in the county of Essex are training our people who are going to be police officers in the way that they see the people as human beings, and that they're not they're not less than human beings. So I think that, but we can't give up on it. We simply cannot give up on it. I feel strongly that a person should live in that community. What happens to them is very often they fall. Some of them they falsify their address and they say they live here or whatever it is. So we have to continue and recording that. So we have a slogan here, bring Essex County first, and I'm going to try to do exactly that, to continue working to make Essex County an example of where it's going. Okay, so thank you. Thanks for your opportunity.
All right. Thanks, Dad, for calling. We got 2 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. We're gonna jump off right here. We're going to let you go, Dad.
Okay.
We're going to wrap up the show.
Okay,
right on.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for calling in, Dad. Once again, that's my father, former Assemblyman William Payne. All around, bon vivant.
I don't exactly know what that word means, Dad, but it's a cool word. So he's gone. Wayne, you want to give the people your final thoughts?
Hey, I'm trying to keep hope alive. I say that each week, man. But I don't want to come back here next Wednesday, and I'm depressed. Maybe my comments should not have been aired tonight. You know,
hey,
you've got to
speak what you feel, brother. You've got to speak what you feel, and the community picks itself up. We'll talk to you later, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. You've seen a lot of it. Thank you, brother. Byron, Brother Byron Saunders, the historian. Give the people your words of encouragement.
Well, the CDC this week declared racism as a serious public health threat, as COVID-19 puts a spotlight on disparities. And I'm thinking, well, after 400 years, I think I could declare it a serious public health threat. Okay.
Right.
So, but anyway, peace and love always. Remember, we are the majority and we are the power. Use your power.
There it is. Brother Byron Saunders, legendary historian. Me, I like to fight. I like to scrap. I like, hey, you listen to my dad, he's low key now, right? But he's a warrior. So we like to fight for our rights. We ain't got a problem with that. So that's why I'm like, welcome to the Terror Dome. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, we don't get along, so we got to get it on. And sometimes he didn't say this. Some people just want to fight you. You got to fight back, brothers and sisters. I'm Citizen Payne. I'm K's son. What you expect? Yeah. Next time.